That leaves us with our speaker tonight. He's from Philadelphia. His group is Last Stop. Please help me welcome Danny.
Oh, I was just telling Dave, man, that I forgot how dang huge this place gets, all people. I'm actually, like, terrified right now. It might be a good idea to get, like, a trash can here because I might throw up in a minute. But anyways, I am Danny, and I am an alcoholic. And by the grace of God, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I do have a sobriety date. It's June 25th of 08. And believe me, that was not a plan of mine. Anytime I ever planned on getting so sober, it didn't last but a day, a week, a month. On June 24th, I had no plans of getting so sober. I was fresh out of jail. And the whole time I was in jail, I said, I'm not going to use. And I got out and I used. And June 24th, God intervened. And I went to a meeting of AA. And my life really hasn't been the same since. I do have a home group. It's the Last Stop. It's down on Kensington Ave. I don't know if any of you have been there, but if you haven't, you should really get a chance to come out. It's a great place. It's a place where you can go and you can see guys come on in with the clothes that they have on. And I'm really sorry. I get really emotional. I get really choked up because a person like me is not supposed to be here. A person like me is not supposed to be at a podium, dressed in a shirt and tie, telling you what God has done for him. Because 4 years ago, the only principle that I had was doing me. And today it's not that way. Anyways... I'm going to ask for the group's help a little bit. How many of you here know your last drink, the day that you drank? Can I get a show of hands, please? Good, I'm in the right spot, because a normal person does not keep track of the last day they drank. And I'm looking out here, and you guys look like a pretty well crowd. You know, I was kind of like, am I really in an AA meeting? I'm looking out here at all these bright, shiny faces. And, you know, I thought I might have the wrong spot for a minute. Anyways, I'm not from Philly. I'm from Detroit. Actually, I'm from a small farm town outside of Detroit. And pretty much the town was you either farmed or you played sports. And when I mean farm, it wasn't corn and stuff like that. We grew other stuff in the backwoods and, you know, that's how my parents afforded to buy their home and our farm and stuff like that. And you know, that was a lifestyle that I grew up with. You know, it was the 70s. There was always someone crashed out on our couch. My mom drank a box of wine every day, and it wasn't the good stuff. It came in the box with the plastic little thing. She passed out. There was times where, you know, my mom would not come home for days, even weeks at a time. And my dad was sort of the one that held us all there. You know, he was the one that had the job. He was a bricklayer. He worked hard. He played hard, but he went to work every day, and he came home every day. And I watched a lot of fighting going on in my home because my mom would just decide to go on a tear and she might not come back for a week. And then I'm having to call the cops on my dad because he knocked my mom's teeth out when she did come home. And I'm not trying to get any pity out of anyone. That's just the way it was. My home was one of those homes where I didn't have friends over because you never knew what was going to go on. I was always allowed to stay at my friend's houses, and as a matter of fact, by like the age six, my parents really didn't. It's not that they didn't care, but I lived in a small town. I was allowed to run the streets. You know, I knew the neighbors, I knew the people across town, and you know, so I was always staying over at somebody else's house. I was actually like living with aunts and uncles a lot, stuff like that. And, you know, today I realize that my parents did the best they could. And I know that they loved me, and I know that if they could have done any better, that they would have. You know, today me and my dad are really good friends. As a matter of fact, the other day I talked to him. I called him up at work, and he still drinks, and he still likes to, you know, sniff white powdery stuff up his nose. And, you know, it is what it is. But when I talk to him today, he says, "Dan, I'm proud of you," you know, and it's pretty cool. But growing up, I was not a very nice kid. As a matter of fact, I say this a lot. Have you guys ever seen the movie The Good Son, where that little evil little demon kid is trying to kill his sisters and brothers and all that? Well, that was me. You know, I remember one time, me and my buddies have a BMX bikes, and we're building ramps, and my little brother, he's like, you know, "Can I do it? Can I do it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, go up the street and get a good start and come back down." Well, when his back was turned, I put three more blocks there, and when he hit the jump, you know, he ended up in the treetops, you know. And a neighbor lady seen me, and she's like, "You're an evil, evil little kid." And I'm like, "Yeah, I know." But anyways, you know, my parents, they got a divorce. I started to develop a stutter in school. And, you know, just a lot of anger, a lot of self-entitlement, man. I felt that everybody owed me. I thought my dad owed me. I thought my mom owed me. And they started like buying me a lot of things. You know, I was one of those kids that had a motorcycle. I had a go-kart. I had all this stuff, and nothing was good enough. I constantly wanted more and more and more. And, you know, we talk about a spiritual malady, and A lot of people talk about that being like a hole in the soul and trying to fill it up. And what I've come to realize over the last few years is that, well, this is my own analogy, is that my spiritual malady was like a trash can. And it was just piled full of all this stuff. And it wasn't that I needed to obtain anything. It was that I had to get rid of some stuff. I had to get rid of a lot of fear, a lot of anger, a lot of jealousy, pride, you know. And anyways, back to childhood. So my parents are going through a divorce. I'm getting into a lot of fights in school. I stutter. And we got this mailman that, you know, all he does is brings our mail to our house and drops it in the box. And I don't know why. I didn't like this guy. I don't know. He brought us our mail. He always smiled and said hello. And I'd see him coming, and I'd get on our roof with a pail of water, and I'd wait for him, and I'd dump water on him. I used to take my bike, and I'd get going real fast, and I'd slide into him, and his mail would go flying everywhere, and I'd laugh at him, and I'd call him a dirty old mailman, you know. Well, one day I get the bright idea. My mom, who spoiled me a lot, had bought me a pellet gun. So I'm hiding, and the mailman's coming, and I decide I'm going to shoot this guy with the pellet gun. And you know, this is how God's got a sense of humor, man. He really does. And so I shoot this guy with a pellet gun, and he drops his, like, he's had enough, man. He's had enough pranks. He drops his bag and he runs dead at me. And I'm like, oh, crap. So I run to the house and I get inside the door and I'm trying to push the door shut and he's trying to come through and my mom is freaking out. She's like, what the heck did you do now? I said, nothing, Mom. And 9 months later, my mom's married to the mailman. So, yeah, I'm responsible for that one. And, you know, this man, in spite of all that stuff that I did to him, you know, married a woman that had 3 kids that weren't his, and he tried his best to provide a home for us. And my mom was still in and out of the rehabs, and I was getting in trouble in school. I got arrested in the school at 10 for bringing a gun to school. Like, who does that? You know, like, just some crazy off-the-wall stuff. And this man tried his best. At age 11, I was getting up for school, and I come downstairs, and my aunts and uncles are all there. And he comes to me, and he says, Dan, you're not going to school today. And I said, why? And he said, sit down, I got to talk to you. So I sit down, and he explains to me that my mom had died the night prior. And all those fears of my mom not coming home, all those fears of being alone came true. You know, my mom was my world, you know, in spite of all her flaws, you know. So now this man decides that he's going to keep us kids, you know. And he doesn't want us to go, you know, he doesn't want to separate us. So he keeps us. And, you know, I used to tell him stuff like, you aren't my dad, you know, and you can't tell me what to do. And by the age of 13, I was in my first rehab. I was introduced to AA in 1987. And I've struggled for 20 years in and out the rooms of AA. I'm not going to get into all the rehab stays and stuff like that, but this is pretty much the gist of it. I'd go in, I'd meet a girl, I'd bust out a window and leave with the girl. Or I'd sneak out a back kitchen door with a girl. And this is at 13, 14, 15 years old, you know. So finally, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, but finally I'm like 16 and the state of Michigan says that I can't live there anymore. They don't want me in the state at all. They said, We're done with you. We don't want you in juvie, because in juvie all I did is get in fights. All I did is gather up the troops and do what I do and cause trouble. The rehab thing didn't work. So they sent me out to Provo, Utah to live with my uncle, who is a Mormon minister. Yeah, so I go out to Provo. I got hair down to my belt. I already got a couple tattoos and earrings and stuff like that, and I decide I'm gonna give this AA thing a shot. You know, why not? I'm you know, in a new town, fresh start. Give AA a shot, and I did. I went to an Alano club there. They got Alano clubs out west, and I got in service, man, because that's what I was told to do. I was told that service secures sobriety. And I'm here to tell you that's not true. The only thing that ensures sobriety is a relationship with God. I stayed in service for about a year. I got a sponsor who you guys said, find someone that got what you want, ask him to help you. So I did. I found a guy that had a big four-wheel drive truck. He had a hot group of girls running around him. And I wanted in that crowd. And I got in. And I got a hot girlfriend. And I got a job. And I'm in service. And I'm getting told stuff like, you can do anything you want in AA as long as you're willing to pay the price. Okay? I did. I'm here to tell you, I can't do whatever I want in AA as long as I'm willing to pay the price. Because I don't know who that's going to affect. And how arrogant of me to think that I know what that price is going to be. I got my first felony drug charge and gun charge while a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't see anything wrong with selling pounds of weed out of my house at 17 years old, a year so sober. Got the door kicked in by, let's just say, some nice gentlemen. And I ended up getting kicked out of the state of Utah. But before that all transpired, I'm going to back up a little bit. You know that guy that I asked for help with the big truck? Well, you know, he's my sponsor, and I love this dude. I loved him to death, man. He was great. And, you know, we went to the gym, and we went rock climbing and rappelling, and we did all this fun stuff. We went camping, and one day I'm coming home from work, right, and his truck's outside of my house. And I start pulling up a little closer. I notice that my furniture's in it. I get up to the door and I'm like, what the hell's going on? And my girlfriend goes, well, me and Tracy have been having an affair and I'm gonna move in with him. And so right then and there it became AA's fault. Blamed everybody but me. And to this day, if I ever see him, I'll give him an apology. I don't believe I owe him an amends. But, or not in apology, I mean, I'll thank him because he did for me what I couldn't do for myself. He got rid of a very sick woman, but. No, but, you know, I blamed AA. And it was my perception, you know, like it was totally whacked, man. It totally turned me off against AA. It turned me off about God, you know, like everything. And so I decided I was going to go to another fellowship. And I tried every fellowship that there was, CA, NA, AA, and I don't have anything against any of them. I think they all serve a purpose. The steps are all God-given. Get help wherever you fit in. You know, I'm not here to knock any fellowship. But anyways, I get kicked out of Provo, and by this time I'm pretty much of age, and I call my PO back home, and she says I can come back there as long as I'm willing to go to meetings and stuff, and I say, yeah, okay, and I come back. And within 6 months of being back home, I was being sentenced to 3.5 years to 20 years because I didn't have any skills. I didn't have any trades. All I knew how to do was stand on a corner and do what I do best. And I was looking at 25 years to life. God saw fit to give me 3.5 years to 20 years. I served the whole thing at 18 years old. The only thing I did right when I was there was I didn't pick up, and I got a GED. And, you know, the whole time that I was in there, I'm telling myself, you know, that drinking is the problem. And that as long as I don't drink,
you know, life's going to get better. And the day before I was going to leave, I'm on the phone with my little brother, and he's going to come give me a ride home. And I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink. I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to go back to school. I've got all these great intentions. And my little brother comes. He picks me up at Jackson Prison, which I don't know if any of you guys know about that, but it's like the biggest walled one in the U.S. And it's a scary place, you know. And I'm looking back. I'm leaving. I'm driving away, and I'm looking back, and I'm going, never again. Never again will I be back there. And within 45 minutes, I stopped at a beer store, bought a 12-pack of beer. I failed to show up to go see a PO, and I was back within 72 hours. You know? Lost all power of choice, man. And I don't know where I crossed that line, but somewhere I did. And the normal became the normal. I get back in jail, and I do real well there. I got my boys there. I can get a job. I know the guards. I know how to make moves. I know how to hustle. And I knew how to live better in jail than I knew how to live better out. You know, and that's a sad place to get to. You know. Somehow I get out. I manage to get off of parole. I don't know how. The lady just finally said I was 2 weeks shy of getting off, and I'd just given my 17th dirty urine. And she said, "Dan, just sign here." She says, "You're done. I'm not sending you to a rehab. Just pay your fines, sign here, and go." And I don't know if she thought she was helping me or not, but you know, I managed to get off parole. I ended up, you know, doing what most of us do. I called up an ex-girlfriend, and "I'm so sorry, baby. I love you. Can we try to make this work, please? Because I don't have anywhere to go." And the next thing you know, we're having a baby, you know. And I wanted a baby. I thought that this was what it was going to take for me to change my life around, man. I'll have a little baby boy, and life's going to be great. I'm going to get a job, once again, filled with great intentions. And I managed to stay off of the booze and the other stuff for about 6 months. Got a job laying brick with my dad, of course, because I'm not the type of guy that can get a job. I got to be given one, you know. And worked with my dad. I was a union bricklayer. Within six months, I'd acquired a motorbike, a boat, a little house we were paying for, and life was good, man. Life was good. We had the baby's room all set up and painted, and the crib and all the toys. And one day, out of the blue, man, I'm driving home. And I decided I deserve one drink. And it's been 6 months now, man. I deserve a drink. And one drink fell into three, fell into 3 months. And I sold the boat, I sold the Harley, and I told the girlfriend that she could have the place because I wasn't staying anymore. Because, you see, she gave me a choice. She said, "Me or the drink." And I chose a drink, and I walked away. The day that my son was born, I don't know how you guys are about the drug talk, but, you know, I watched my son being born while I was on like five hits of LSD, you know, because I was in such a stupor. When I show up to see my son being born, the doctors were more worried about me than they were him. I was down to about 145 pounds. I had hair down to my butt. I hadn't showered in about a week and a half. I hadn't ate in about a week and a half. And I hadn't slept in about a week and a half. And after my son was born, I got to cut the cord. And they pulled me into a room, and they actually admitted me. I stayed for about 5 days, and I went home, and I tried to make it work again with my son's mom. And for the life of me, man, I love this boy, man. When he was born, I cried, man. I cried because he was supposed to be born with spinal bifida, and we chose to have him anyways. And he was born fine. He was healthy. And so she works days, and I work nights, so I can spend time with him. And what ends up happening, in short, I end up just bringing him around everywhere, doing everything I was doing with a kid in a car seat. I'm running in and out of stores, stealing stuff. I'm having girls on the avenue watch him while I go get what I need. Not being a father at all. I'm being a real scumbag. There was times where I wouldn't show up to pick up my girlfriend from work, and I would have my kid out where she wouldn't know where me or her kid were for 2 or 3 days. And I put a lot of fear into her. And I don't think I can ever repay the debt that I owe her. But anyways, long story short, man, I end up in 2000 something. I decide I'm gonna sober up. I go to a detox, and I'm gonna work things out with my son's mother. And I end up meeting a stripper girl that works in that was at the place I was at, and all of a sudden, you know, the ex-girlfriend didn't seem as important. I got this new thing that I can fall back on, you know. She knows how to make a little bit of money. And that's what I did. I ran around for about 7 years. Walked away from my son, my son's mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, and I went just from state to state, just burning every bridge that I could. I can't even list the states I've been in. I've lived in like 9 states in the last few years, and you know, telling her that I loved her, but putting her out on the avenue, you know, because that's the type of guy I am when I'm getting high or drinking. I don't care about anyone. All I care about is getting well. So, long story short, I make a phone call after every bridge is burned to a sister of mine that I hadn't seen in like 11 years. She's living in Jersey. And she's like, "Dan, I love you." I explained to her that I'm a heroin addict. I got a vicious habit. I drink every day. I can't stop. She says, "Come out. I want to help you." So me and my girlfriend decide to pack up our stuff from St. Louis, is where we were living at the time, and drive all the way here to Jersey. And she's going to help me, you know. So why wouldn't I accept, you know? And I come, and I end up devastating this woman's marriage, this woman's daughter. I stole her wedding band off of her hand when she was asleep and helped her look for it the following day, because that's the type of person that I am when I'm getting drunk. And one night, she went to bed, or I went upstairs to go to bed. She was downstairs on the couch. She was going to watch a movie. And in the morning, her little daughter comes into my room, and she says, Uncle Danny, can I have a bowl of cereal?" And, you know, I'm self-centered, I'm selfish. I said, "Go ask your mom." You know, I didn't want to be bothered. And she goes, "I tried, but she won't get up." So I get mad. you know, I'm mad now. And I get up, and I walk down. She's laying on the couch, and I grab the blanket. I said, "Get up." And her head flips to the side, and blood ran out of her mouth, and she died in her sleep of a brain aneurysm. And my first thought was not, you know, this poor little girl, she's got to live the rest of her life without a mom. My first thought was, what the hell am I going to do now? Where am I going to go? What am I going to do? I don't know anyone here. And so the funeral, you know, my dad comes from Michigan, and my aunts and uncles and all them show up. And at this time, I'm on a little green fluid that you get at a window, you know. I'll just call it what it is. I'm on methadone, okay? And I gotta go to the clinic every day to get well. So prior to the funeral, I gotta make sure that I get what I get before I go. And I show up at the funeral after leaving Camden at the clinic, and I'm just tore up. I've eaten probably a half a bottle of pills. I've drank a bottle of vodka, and I've had my dose of methadone. And I'm dressed sort of like I am now, shirt and tie, trying to hide the fact that I got track marks up and down my body from all the other stuff I'd been doing. And when I go to take my coat off, half of the pews scream. I turn around and I look, and they're all yelling and pointing. And I realize I got a gun tucked in the back of my pants at my sister's funeral. And they thought I was there to kill my dad, but I wasn't. I was just so out of it that I didn't even realize that I'd had the thing. And I was asked to leave. And I still have a brother to this day that will not speak to me. You know, I've tried to make amends, and he doesn't want to hear it. You know. Long story short, man, I end up in and out of the Camden County Jail over and over and over again. And there's this, I'm sure that some of you have been to jail. I don't know. I'm sure like probably six of you have probably been to jail. But have you guys ever gone like in and out of jail and there's always that guy there? Like always. He's always there. Like every time you go, he's there. Well, I had this experience like 18 times with this dude. And we became really good friends, became cellies. And then when we'd get out, we lived in the same abandominiums together. We'd rip and run together. And if I didn't see him, I knew where he was. He was in jail. And if he didn't see me, he knew where I was. I was in jail. Well, on our last hurrah, I'm in the Burlington County Jail. I don't even know how I got there. I don't even know anyone in Burlington County. How the hell I ended up there, I don't know. But we end up there, and you know, we've been there for like 5 months, and we're doing all the things we do. We're hustling the cigarettes and this and that. And he makes a joke about how we're living better in jail than we were out on the streets. And it hit me, man. I was like, dude, that isn't even funny. That's true. Like, and it was my last day there, and he goes, Dan, he says, what are you going to do, man? I says, what are you going to do? You're going home tomorrow. And the first time in my life, man, I think I said the most honest words that I've ever said. I said, I don't know. I said, I don't know. I'm scared. Tried everything, man. I've tried therapy. I've tried church. I've tried AA, NA, CA. I haven't got a clue. I said, I know I can't use. If I drink, I'm coming right back here. So I get out the next day, and I'm pretty proud, man. I made it like 4 hours without a drink, man. You know, I get out with that little $70 jail check because I worked for a few months, and they pay you like $8 a month or whatever it is. You know? And I saved that whole thing up, believe me. You never know what you might need it for. And I managed to make it about 4 hours. Went through the whole $70 in like 20 minutes and felt like no effect. Like nothing. And I was mad. And I was sitting at the bus stop in Camden, and I'm making phone calls trying to get someone to come and give me a ride so I can go do what I do, go run in a store and run out real quick, make some money. And this dude that I knew, his name's Craig, he doesn't mind if I say his name, I've asked him. And he was coming from North Camden, had a pocket full of drugs, and he rides by and he looks at me and he turns around and he goes, Dan, he says, what are you doing? I said, I'm fresh out of jail. He goes, I know, I can tell. He said, but what are you doing here, dude? I said, what do you mean, what am I doing here? This is where I belong. Camden. And he's like, dude, there's an AA meeting a couple blocks away. It starts in about 20 minutes. He says, there's a guy that, you know, John, that's been going there, and he's doing really well. And he goes, you feel like going? I said, absolutely not. What do I want to go to an AA meeting for, dude? I'm trying to get a drink, you know? I'm not trying to not drink, you know? And he didn't really say much, man. He said, well, you know, it's every day between 6 and 7. If you feel like going, you know, stop on in there. And he started to pedal his bike away. And I'm telling you, man, the only time I run is when the cops are behind me. And for some reason, this dude got about a half a block away, man, and that voice said, what are you doing? This is your chance. And I ran, and I caught up to this dude, and I said, come on, man, where's it at? Let's go. And all he did is walk me up to the door, knocked, and left. Because he had better things to do, you know? Like, he still had some drugs to do, you know? And these two guys, it's 6:05, there's supposed to be a meeting going on, and there's two people in the room. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? Are you trying to set me up? And the guys that are there are two guys that I knew, two guys that I used to live with, two guys that I used to drink with, and two guys that are so sober. And, you know, if that's not God, I don't know what is. You know, they offered me a place to stay for a night. They said, you have anywhere to go? And I said, yeah, of course I got somewhere to go. And they're like, dude, you just got out of jail. Like, what, do you got in a bando to go to? I said, well, we got power there. And they offered me a place to stay for a night, man. And you know what, man? It was the first time I felt safe in a long time. In a real long time. And the following morning, they said, hey, we're going to Philly, man. Why don't you come? And I'm like, man, I'm not going to Philly. No. And they're like, dude, what do you got to lose? I'm like, all right. And they're like, well, first off, we got to ask you, you know, if you're going to go with us, do you have anything you shouldn't have? And I said, well, I got my tools, you know, like I got my syringe and my crack pipe. Yeah. They're like, well, you're going to have to give them to us. And I said, oh, no. I might need those. I said, but I'll make you a deal. I'll hide them around the corner here, and if I need them, I'll come back and get them. They said, okay, fair enough. And 75 days later, I went back to the spot that I hid them, and I threw them in the trash. And I haven't found a reason to pick up a drink or a drug since. And it's been 3 years and 9 months. I got to the last stop, and I'm not one of those guys that jumped into the book. As I said, I stutter, and believe me, I stuttered really bad when I got there. I couldn't say a sentence. I was that guy that stood against the fence with his arms crossed, and I was afraid to laugh. I was afraid to smile. I was afraid to get close to anybody because I figured that you wanted something from me, you know. And there was this 20-year-old kid, and I'm sure he won't mind. You guys may know him. His name is Michael Carney. He's a sober member of AA as well. He's been sober coming up on 5 years now. He had about nine months and the kid's on fire. He's 20 years old. And this kid worked a 40-hour a week job. He didn't drive. He had to take the L on the bus everywhere he went. And he came down to the last stop every day to check to see how I was doing. And this 20-year-old kid, he used to get off the L and he used to skip down the street. I mean, skip. Like, hands flaying and everything. And he'd come down and he'd tell me how he loved me and how God loved me. And I'd tell him, shut the hell up before I punch you in the face. I said, dude, you don't even know me. You don't know anything about me, and if you did, you wouldn't be telling me you loved me. You don't know what I've done. You don't know where I've been. And after about 40 days or so, something like that, I don't know. One day, man, I was ready to jump off a roof at work. I really was. And the only thought I had was about my mom and her suicide and how it affected me. And I went back to the last stop, and I got a bag, and I was going to pack my bag, and I was going to go. I didn't know where I was going to go. I just knew I was going to go. And here comes this little prancing little redheaded kid. I love you. Are you ready to do this? Do what? I'm ready to smack you. And he said, come on, man, just give it a shot. He said, what do you got to lose? And I was like, Mike, if it'll keep you from coming down here every day and bothering me, whatever, come on, let's do this. And I got into this work in disbelief, man. I'm one of those ones that's living proof that I was not buying what you were selling. And I'm not going to go through every step, but I'm going to say that somewhere around step six, step seven, I started to have an experience. I started to see how my own experiences could benefit someone else's, and I started to care about other people. I still battled the God thing a lot. And he said, Dan, he said, if you want to get to know God, he said, get to know his kids. He said, God can be as simple as just loving someone else, just loving them the way God's loved you. And I said, okay, I can deal with that. We moved on, and I started to make amends. And I got a friend, his name's Tom. When I was 30 days sober or so, we talked about all these spots that we wanted to go and, you know, the people that we owed amends to. And I said, you know, I got to go home. I got to go to Michigan and make amends. And he says, well, dude, when the time's right, I'll go with you. It took 14 months and Tom was still so sober. And when he learned that I was going to go, he came with me. We drove 17 hours on a bus both ways, and I really wanted to send flyers out and, like, run a town hall because I'm pretty sure I owe the whole town an amends. And just be like, Dan's in town. If he owes you anything, please come here. But, no, I got a chance to go and make amends to my son's mom and my son. And, you know, I got to make amends to my dad. I got to make amends to my aunt and uncles. And I spent a whole week just going from house to house. And I had to bring money. And I had to bring a change of heart too, man. You know, because there was a lot of things that I thought that they wronged me, and I had to learn how to forgive them first before I could expect them to do the same for me. My life has not been the same since. My son's mom and me are good friends today. She calls me and she talks to me about her son and what we're going to do with him. And it's not her son anymore. It's our son. Except for when he's being bad, then it's my son. But, you know, I got to spend the summer with my son. Like, she allowed him to fly out here, you know, and spend the summer. I got to spend Christmas with my son because I returned him safely. And she trusts that he's okay when he's in the hands of me, you know. And he's been going through some rough times, and she's even said that if he wants to, he can come out here and live. You know, it don't happen to someone like me, you know. That guy that I was telling you about, real quick, step 12, that guy that I was telling you about in jail, Brian, the guy that was just always there, we ripped and ran. God kept telling me, man, like, go to Camden. Do some 12-step work there. Well, in the course of me going there and spending a lot of time on the streets of Camden, Brian just celebrated three years. I've got to give him his year coin, his 2 year coin, and his 3 year coin. And, you know, that's just evidence right there that this works. Because not one, but two of us that used to do the exact same thing are sober. We got the same home group. We work together at the same job. We sponsor guys, and we're in service to AA. You know, but it goes even deeper than that. Like, I've seen so many people recover that it's crazy. Like, people that I knew, my aunt had just celebrated 12 years, you know. And, you know, life's been really good, man. It could be, you know, there's some stuff that I still got a lot of room to grow, man. There's areas of life that, you know, I'm a retard. I really am. If you're friends with me on Facebook, just as Johnny knows, I am a social retard. I say the most inappropriate stuff just to get a reaction, you know. And I've been in service since I was about 75 days sober or so. I've been the general chair for the last stop. I am a treasurer for the Any Lengths Conference. And that's crazy that people actually trust me with money. And checks and stuff like that. I'm now the intergroup rep for the last stop. And I just applied for a federal badge to get into the prisons. I've been doing the jail commitments because that's where I feel God wants me to be, you know. I don't know, man. I sponsored a lot of guys. For a while, I wore them as a badge of honor. I was running around like a nut with a backpack and four-step guides trying to save the world, but really I wasn't trying to save anyone. I was trying to save me because I was going insane. And today, you know, I don't sponsor as many guys as I used to, but I try to give the guys that I have the ample amount of time that it takes to get through this work. As before, I was just kind of rushing guys through, and I really wasn't being of service to anyone except for myself. You know, I've learned a lot along the way. I still have a lot more to learn. If you guys are ever in Philly, please come on down and see us. As a matter of fact, we have a meeting that's just like this. Well, not just like this. Most of the people don't have their teeth. But no, we have a one-hour speaker meeting. It's on Sunday night at 8 o'clock. It's a great time. As a matter of fact, on April 6th, we're having a mini conference. Starts at 8 o'clock at night, and it's going to end at 1 o'clock. It's going to be a fun time, and everything we do is free. So please come support us. Other than that, it's 9 o'clock, and that's all I got. Thanks for having me.